Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is presented by Iron Jock and Wisconsin.Golf's Shirts of Summer. There are two constants of a Wisconsin summer, heat and humidity. But now we can deal with the two H's with the initials I and J. That's Iron Jock, advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. So join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. Along with Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here. It's Talking.Golf on a Friday. Gary's back in the comforts of the Caledonia headquarters. I have returned out to the hot, hot confines of the Phoenix, Arizona area after a long week at the Wisconsin State Amateur. And Gary, we should probably do full disclosure first. I might have worn my Iron Jock shirt a couple times this week here and there. It was one of those where there's really no protection from the sun out at Sand Valley, is there?
No, there's not. Unless you go deep into the rough, maybe where Jim Kelce probably hung out a little bit. Jim walked, of course, quite a bit, our photographer, and man, he looked beat, and I'm sure he was, and I know I was beat walking that the last 10 or 12 holes with the final group. But it was a hot one, Rob, but it was a great tournament.
And before we break it down, we should say, and hats off to Jim, because he did a phenomenal job. And the old adage, a picture tells 1,000 words. All you need to do is go to our site today. You do need to read Gary's story, but all you have to do is look at the picture of Tyler Obermüller hoisting his son with his dad there alongside, three generations of Obermüllers winning a state amateur. It was probably one of the more real good feel-good stories that we've had out of a state amateur, Gary, in a long time. They're all good because, you know, the winners have worked hard to get there. But when you look at a guy that is now a two-time champion but 13 years removed from his first, I mean, those kind of stories just don't happen every day.
No, they don't, Rob. Yeah, it was really fun. It was a fun week. And Tyler, you know, we talked about, you know, you did a great piece breaking down the field and who we expected to play well. And Tyler's name was nowhere in there. And it's no slight or disrespect to Tyler, but he hasn't been playing much golf. Told us he hasn't been playing very, very good when he does play. He's got a family. He's got two little boys and he's got a job. So he's one of these mid-ams who just doesn't have a ton of time to play golf. But obviously the talent and the competitiveness is still there, because he had a phenomenal week at Sand Valley. And it's funny, because no one might have picked him to win at the beginning of the week. But was it a surprise that he won? Not at all.
No, it really wasn't. I think, you know, when you look at, we had 2, 4, 6, 7 past champions in the field. The most recent tournament winner was Nick Nelson, the former Marquette golfer who now lives in Milwaukee, and then Eddie Wada, the former Badger golfer who now lives in Chicago. But the two common threads between those guys, they're working now. They're not playing golf frequently. We lost the five guys after that to the professional ranks, and then Pearson Hunt is playing a national schedule, and if he had played the state am, it would have been 8 weeks in a row. We were asked that question once or twice this week. It's really a wide open time for golf in Wisconsin. And I'm just amazed that Tyler Obermüller was able to kind of, you know, is it muscle memory? Is it institutional memory of how to win golf tournaments? Because he looked like a natural out there.
He did. And I'll tell you what, Rob, I followed him over the final, I think 10 holes in the final round yesterday. And he still is long. I mean, you know, he played with guys much younger than him. Blake Wisdom, you know, probably almost half his age. And he was right there with those guys off the tee. Adam Miller, 25 years old. And he's old. He's 35. But he was as long as those other guys who are playing golf all the time and I'm sure are on TrackMan and, you know, getting a new equipment and dialing in their everything. And not that Tyler probably doesn't do some of that, but But yeah, he still moves it out there a long way. He hit a 3-wood, 275 yards onto the 10th green, par 5, 555. So he still has the power, Rob, and obviously has the short game because he made a bunch of putts and made some clutch putts on the back nine, three birdies, played the back nine, 300 par, and pulled away from a big log jam to win. It was pretty impressive.
It was, and I walked the first five holes, I believe it was, with him. And, you know, the start to that final round with Blake Wisdom rolling in about a 35-foot putt over one of the many, many ridges in the greens out at Sand Valley, it kind of, to me, was, you know, I thought going to be a precursor to the fact that we were going to have another college kid win this thing, even though there weren't a whole lot, you know, in position, you know, in term. And when I say in position, not what they had done through 54 holes, I was talking about you've got maybe five or six that are really playing at a level where, you know, you expect them to do well. Blake's one of them. Obviously, Cameron Huss, Bennett Swavely, and a bunch of the Badgers and the Marquette golfers, you know, but it really, and then in Ty Kretz, who had a great tournament, and he's really coming on, you know, but it's not, you know, Pearson Hunt, it's not Thomas Longbella, it's not someone that comes in and you expect that they will be there on day one, you know, probably fighting for the lead. And then, like we've seen more often than not, guys pulling away because they are so well prepared to win this thing. That didn't happen this time. And for a while there, we thought we were going to have a five-way playoff, between a bunch of different guys. You know, there really wasn't a guy or a golfer that was, you know, that you could pigeonhole into being, you know, a surefire state AM champion at Sand Valley.
No, there wasn't. And that's what made Tyler's victory so remarkable, because they did have a five-way tie very early on the bat when the last group was on the 10th hole, I believe. I think Adam Garski joined four other guys, and there was very briefly for maybe 5 minutes, five guys tied for the lead. And then, you know, Tyler took control of the tournament. He birdied 10, two-putted on a par, hit a green and par five and two-putted, went to the next hole, hit a gap wedge to 6 feet, made that one, and just sort of took control of the tournament, made a few pars, and then made a big clutch birdie. And there's another photo that Josh got that was great with his body English coaching that putt in on 16, a 25-footer downhill. And that really basically wrapped up the tournament. Adam Miller made an eagle on the 18th hole to close the gap from 3-1. But really, at that point after 16, Tyler was in control of the tournament.
Tyler won the 2004 WIA State Championship for River Falls back at University Ridge. It was a year where he won in a playoff for the individual title, and then his team had to win in a playoff over Mequon Homestead for the title. So, and then, of course, Tyler went to the University of Wisconsin. I believe at that point, Gary, it would have been the Jim Schumann era, I think, of coaching, and had a real solid career there. But turned pro for a while. In fact, I went back and looked last night, a week after winning his state amateur in 2009, he entered the Minnesota State Open as a professional. It was a very quick turnaround to be doing that. And obviously now back in, you know, amateur reinstatement and, you know, working in the Minneapolis area. So it's a path that a lot of guys take. The Garrett Jones, most, you know, is one that comes to mind. And, you know, now Nick Nelson and Bob Gregorski and all, you know, all these great amateurs that have dabbled and then come back. In your mind, what stood out about Tyler Obermiller that maybe made this the right time, the right year for a guy like that to make this kind of comeback and do it, you know, hoisting a trophy?
I think maturity and experience, Rob, because even though it had been 13 years, you know, he did win a state amateur and knows how to do it. And I think in that back nine, he was just very, very poised. He never showed any sign that, you know, that he was feeling any pressure at all. He made those clutch putts on 10 and 11 and 16. And just, he was just, looked to me that he was very calm, sort of in the zone that golfers talk about, and patient. I think his experience carried him through there. He was playing against guys who weren't quite as experienced. Certainly Blake Wisdom. Blake, you know, we got to take our hats off to Blake. He had a really great tournament, Robin. If not for three holes, he had a triple bogey, In the third round, and he had two quads in the fourth round, and he hung in there still, had a pretty good finish. So you have to tip your cap to him. But yeah, I think it was just experience and maturity that, that carried Tyler through to the end there.
I wanted to ask you about that with Blake Wisdom, because, you know, like I said, he birdied one, and then I watched him get his first quad at the par four second hole, and I'll describe it. You know, he had, you know, reasonable yardage in. It's you kind of drive it out to a ridge, and then you have sort of somewhat a blind approach shot, and his flew the green. And then he tried to flop it on. It went over off the side, tried to flop it back on, went right back to where he was when he started on the approach shot, you know, behind the green, then tried to run one in the bank, didn't quite get it hard enough to hit, and then check and run onto the hole or towards the hole, and finally got on the green and made a, you know, almost made the long putt for a double bogey, but or a triple bogey, but it wound up being an eight. And at that point, you know, again, the Sand Valley brought out the best and the worst in everybody based on where their games are at right now. Blake Wisdom had very few bad holes, very few, and made a lot of birdies. But the big number got Blake Wisdom. The little number got Adam Miller. And to me, that was as surprising as the big numbers with Blake Wisdom, because Adam obviously is a 7-year caddy out at Sand Valley and has guided many a person through the ups and downs, twists and turns of all those courses out there. And, but, you know, he got, you know, a taste of what, I guess, you know, all the people that he helps serve when they come to Sand Valley, you never know when you're going to get, you know, maybe a three putt here or a, you know, out of position wedge shot there. It was different things for those three guys in that last group. And, I don't know what Blake's, quad was like when you saw him. Yours, you saw that was on a par three though, right?
Yeah, I'll describe it. And then I'll say something else about Blake after this, after he made a quad. Okay, so on the par three on the back of 14, I believe, his foot slipped as he was in his downswing. They hit his ball and he hit a cold shank. It went, you know, anyone who's ever hit a shank knows what it looks like, 60 yards right, up into the hinterland, you know, and he had a very bad lie. He hit his next shot about maybe 20 yards into a pine tree, and he had to play then backward. So after he hit his third shot, he was still, I'm going to say, 80 yards from the green on a par three. The next shot, he completely chunked, Rob. He hit it about 15 yards into another bunker. And finally got on the green in five shots and made a seven, made a quadruple bogey. But the thing that really impressed me, he went to the next tee. He snap hooked his drive into a waste bunker well left of the fairway. And I thought he was completely unraveling. And then he hit one of the best shots of the tournament, Rob, from a waste, you know, huge waste area. He complete wrong angle to the pin, which was for him, it would have been on the left lobe of the green. He had to fly a bunker short of the green and stop his ball from a waste bunker from about 160. And he hit it to 10. He hit it to 10 feet and made for a birdie. So that to me showed showed what the kid is made of. You know, he could very easily could have made a triple on that hole too. And he turned around and made a birdie. So that was one of the most impressive things I saw in the final round, was how he, you know, bounced back from that second quad in one round in the final round of the state amateur.
Well, and it's interesting too, because at the start of the week, I asked, you know, we always kind of confirm, especially in this era of COVID eligibility, how much college eligibility he has left at Bucknell. And he'll be a senior this year, but he does have a COVID year and he plans to take it. He doesn't know where yet. But, you know, all this kind of stuff is like being a high school recruit all over again, you know, and showing the way you're able to bounce back. I mean, he put together a great college resume out there at Bucknell. I believe they're the Patriot League. And I've just been really impressed that, you know, it was a good fit for him. And he has made the most of it. Now, I think he can go to a significant Division I school, you know, for that fifth year, which is kind of becoming the way of college golf. But I thought that was, you know, really, you know, I mean, that's what Sand Valley dealt. And then the other, I thought, big turning point while I was still out in the course was on the fourth hole. Everybody hit their, it's a par five, it goes out and then up the hill. And Tyler Obermiller had a, you know, a hybrid, three wood hybrid type club into the green. But there was about a 10, you know, 5 or 10 minute wait for the green to clear. and he was the first to hit, and the left-hander, all of a sudden he, you know, just totally pull hooks his second shot, and it was right from the start. And I thought it was, you know, deep into the trees that you reference, way, way off the fairways where Jim Kelce, you know, would have been out there taking pictures. And it amazingly came to rest in an, you know, a clearing just past the trouble. And he had a shot into the green. He thought, and he knew he had a backstop there, and he thought he'd hit it perfect, or at least, you know, well enough to not carry up to where it wasn't going to come back down. And it stayed up. He had a great putt from an awkward angle, you know, back down, but then missed like a 3-footer for par. On the one hand, it could have been a lot worse because that could have been a lost ball penalty. And it could have been even better because he missed a short putt. I guess in hindsight, you know, only losing one shot to par there, the history will tell us was enough. But when you see what Adam Miller did on 18, eagling the hole to get within one, I mean, that's how fine a line it was out there. And the thing was, very few people in contention knew necessarily they were in contention because it changed by the minute.
It did. Yeah. I was on my phone the whole back nine checking the leaderboard, and guys were moving up and falling back. And then Tyler, you know, made those couple birdies and sort of moved out in front. But yeah, at one point, you know, I thought we could have a 5-man playoff, or, you know, any one of these 5 or 6 or 7 guys could, you know, make some birdies on the back nine and take control. It turned out to be Tyler, but it could have been any one of those guys. Adam Miller, you know, played very well, but his putter let him down. 2 or 3 putts, Rob, he had that I would say were very makeable that he left short of the hole. And, you know, as a caddy out there, you know, obviously knows what the greens are like and knows the breaks and knows the speed. So I think he was disappointed in his putter. And he did mention that to us, that his putter let him down. But, you know, he played very well, too. And you're right. That one, saving a bogey on that one hole for Tyler turned out to be probably really huge.
There have been 16 golfers to win 2 or more titles. The last one to join the two-time champion club before Tyler yesterday was Ryan Quinn in 2002. Mark Bemowski won a state amateur title in 2005, so in between there, but that was his 6th, and he wound up, the late great Mark Bemowski wound up with 6 state amateur titles. E.P. Alice won 10 between 1911 and 1930. So you're talking modern era here, Gary, and very few guys have won multiple titles. Ryan Quinn won back-to-back. You know, you look at that great era of J.P. Hayes, Skip Kendall, Mark Wilson, Steve Stricker, and J.P. was the only guy to win 2, and it was, you know, there was a year in there where he didn't win. Skip Kendall won in 87 at Maple Bluff. It's amazing. It's not an easy tournament to win once, let alone twice, and now to win it 13 years apart from your first, I think is just one of the more incredible feats that we've seen in the state amateur in a long, long time.
Oh, there's no question, Rob. And to be fair, a lot of those guys who won state amateurs didn't get a chance to win a second because they turned professional. They were that correct. Good. But winning 2 state amateurs, you know, suddenly you're in the Hall of Fame discussion, which is where Tyler belongs now. He's, I think, 5 years away from being eligible, but if you win 2 state amateurs, you're a pretty sure bet to make the Wisconsin Golf Hall of Fame. So we'll be talking about Tyler in a few years, Rob, in those meetings.
There are a lot of other golfers that acquitted themselves well as that leaderboard changed. We've talked about Adam Miller. You know, this second year in a row, Gary, he finishes a runner-up. His time is coming. I think we felt this was the time that it would come. But, you know, Aaron Hills next year, how do you think his game suits that course as a left-hander? You know, that's not where he caddies. Maybe there's less pressure. I mean, honestly, one of the great moments of the tournament was yesterday when he came to 18 with all of his caddy friends, some that were in the tournament, others, you know, there were 20 to 25 of them we heard that were caddying for other golfers, but there were a lot of them up there, you know, kind of a scene out of Caddyshack where, you know, they watch him hit his approach shot and it hits on the left edge of that green and starts funneling down, and they're cheering that ball every, you know, rotation down there because, you know, an albatross would have knotted it up too. And instead, it rests about maybe 6-7 feet from the hole. He makes it. But, you know, he clearly, it was almost like maybe Steve Stricker playing the AmFam Championship, maybe too much pressure on him. And he's really grinding to be, you know, take that next step. Player of the year last year was a huge step for Adam Miller. He needs to win one of these. He wants to win one of these. What do you think about missing the chance this year and maybe him being in position next year at Erin Hills?
Well, I think he would have an excellent chance, Rob, because of the similarities between the courses. The one he caddies on and has caddied on for 7 years, the Sand Valley course and the Mammoth Dunes course, but primarily Sand Valley, very, very similar to Erin Hills, as you saw this past week in so many ways. Wide open, windy, and we can talk about how the wind blew the scores on in the third round, but, you know, linksy, hard, fast, firm conditions. So Adam sees that every day as a caddy and plays in it a lot. So I would think Erin Hills would be another very good course for him next year, Rob.
One of the three golfers who finished tied for third, the other two were Zach Place out of Illinois. He's a Northern Illinois golfer. And then Travis Pronchinski, who was seemingly in the, you know, near the top of the leaderboard from the time that he shot 68 on Monday all the way through the end. He finishes T3, the Publinks Mid-Am champ, now living out in Heartland, playing at Watertown Country Club, actually living in Oconomowoc. And, but Jack Schultz, 69 in the final round, and after he went 68 at Sand Valley, 75 at Mammoth Dunes, 78 back at Sand Valley on Wednesday, and then comes back with 69. You know, he admitted that, you know, he's having a tough time figuring out the consistency of his game in these tournaments when you, you know, go like that, because all of a sudden yesterday he turned it on really well down the stretch, and before you know it, he's in contention. And I still think Jack's going to, you know, get it done at this age at some point soon. He's not going away anytime soon. And I think he's a guy that, you know, next year will be a force to be reckoned with.
Jack makes as many birdies. He's very explosive, Rob. He makes as many birdies as anybody. I mean, he set the scoring record at the Ray Fisher. The guy gets the ball in the hole. Unfortunately, I think in some of the tournaments that he hasn't won, he's made too many bogeys. So yeah. I think Jack Committee's got to figure out a way to to eliminate some of those bogeys, because as far as firepower and making birdies and eagles, he's right there with anybody in the state. So if he can just figure out a way to knock one or two bogeys off his card every day, he's going to win one of these two.
He did leave on a positive note when we talked on his way out after the tournament yesterday, Gary. He's one of several qualifiers from the state, Blake Wisdom, another one in the U.S. Amateur. And he feels he's as well suited now to play in a national competition. He's played in eight and only made match play twice, only played two matches, and has never made a mid-amateur, which is another thing, especially with being at Erin Hills this year. But you're really looking forward to the U.S. amateur. And I still think getting to where he wants to go with the game that he has and really the mind that he has is a work in progress. We'll see if the U.S. amateur does anything. The only disappointment, he said, Gary, is, you know, the state amateur, or the state open, which runs concurrently with the U.S. amateur this year, would have been a home game for him. He could have slept in his own bed. He says he's not a big fan of going to tournaments where you got to stay in hotels. So, but I think he'll gladly take a trip out to the U.S. amateur in New Jersey next month and see what he can do with it. Because even the younger guys marveled at the fact of how long he hits the ball, and it seems to get longer and longer. Yeah. I know if you follow him on Twitter, you know that he's changed clubs around a little bit, and the maybe the degree or the shafts in those clubs. And so he continues to kind of be the lab rat, as it were, in far as having his equipment, you know, suited to his game.
Yeah, one of the smartest, most analytical guys that we know of playing golf in Wisconsin right now, Rob. He certainly has the mind. He has the temperament. You know, you rarely ever see him get flustered. I mean, he's just as laid back and intense, but laid back, which I think is a great combination when you play golf. And like we've said, and you've mentioned his length, he has the firepower. He can reach the par fives. He can reach some par fives that maybe other guys can't. And yeah, makes a ton of birdies. So I think you're right. He's another guy who's in a space where his maturity and experience are going to pay off. And we certainly have not heard the last of Jack. That's for sure.
And I think maybe the kind of the flying under the radar finishes Well, Sebastian Kaysen is going to Loyola this fall out of, with the final round 68, second year in a row. You know, last year was his home course at Westmore. This year, you know, it's at, you know, two tough courses at Sand Valley. And then he figures that, you know, Sand Valley, the original out on Thursday and shoots 68. But Ty Kretz, who's at South Dakota State, is really quietly having a phenomenal summer. 72, 75, 74, 70. He finishes T6 along with Tyler Leach, who opened and closed with a 71, but just had a few too many bumps in the road in the middle to really be on the doorstep of winning the thing. And then Adam Garski was the other guy tied for six, just a few shots back. And he's the one that, you know, was tied at the turn and really didn't know it, Gary, because it's not like we have great big scoreboards. And if you don't look at the leaderboard on the phone at the right time, and if you don't have the right service out in the course, like I didn't with T-Mobile, if you had more eyes and you were in, but T-Mobile, you weren't, you had no idea where you stood. And, three very different situations there. Tyler Leach, who's had a great career at Marquette and another year to go, is a former high school state champion. And then, you know, Ty Kretz just, really motivated to keep getting better. And Adam Garski is just the professor of the game. It's fun to see those different personalities and ironically all grouped in that sixth place finish.
Yeah. Talk about, guys who are in different stations of life. And, you know, I talked to Tyler after one of his rounds. I think it might've been the first or second round, Rob, but he bemoaned the fact that he's not making any putts. And he said, this has been an ongoing problem for a couple of years. Maybe one of the top five or six ball strikers in the entire field at the state am, but just is having a hard time with the putter these days. And I sure hope he can figure that out. He's coming back for a fifth year, his COVID year at Marquette. And if he starts making putts, Rob, he's going to do some amazing things because the guy can really hit the ball.
We expected to see Cameron Huss in the mix at the end and just didn't play well enough the first three rounds to be there. He shot 71 yesterday to move up six spots into a tie for 13th. It was a good week for the Badgers. Graham Moody finished T10. He's a Badger out of Vancouver, Washington. I think four Badgers made the cut. If you include Clayton Tribu, who's coming back on a transfer, he shot 71 in the opening round, then three 75s. And, it really, I thought, was a good a good week. Ryan Smith played, didn't make the cut, but then caddied for Cam Huss in the final couple rounds. It was neat to see Mike Wilson out there yesterday. And then after the round, kind of holding court on Craig's porch behind the first and 10th tees with his player and his players. And that was neat. And then of course the neat story about Marquette offering Will Hemauer at Milwaukee Marquette. He was all set to go to school at St. Louis University this fall and gets the offer on Monday after the first round from Steve Bailey and a Marquette Hilltopper finally going to become a Marquette Golden Eagle. I can't remember that happening in recent memory, but it's neat that it's happening now to Will Hemauer.
Yeah, there were a number of great stories that came out of the state amateur, Rob, and that certainly was one of them. Another good story that involving another Marquette high player that we probably should mention is what happened to Liam Morrow Farrell, right? Was signing an incorrect score, coming back the next day and owning up to it, which, you'd like to think that every golfer in the field would have done that, but truthfully, there probably are some who wouldn't. And got to give a lot of credit to a young man who DQ'd himself for signing an incorrect scorecard.
Yeah, I agree. And Liam was motivated to play well here. He was the number five guy on the Marquette State Championship team in 2019, the last one that the Hilltoppers have won right before COVID, and then lost his senior season to COVID and wound up getting a full ride academic scholarship to Loyola University in Chicago to study pre-med through a biology track. But now really wants to play. He played very, very little, Gary, and I can't emphasize how little. If you look at, the record doesn't lie. The blue golf software that's used for the WPGA Junior Tour, captures every time that you tee it up. And he may not have played 10 events over 4 years, but always was good enough to hold down the number five spot behind guys like Jack Blair, Jack Lutze, And then, you know, the other kids that have come through the Marquette program during that era. And now Liam was trying to catch the attention of the Loyola men's coach, Eric Hoops. And in turn got, you know, because of his, you know, stated passion to want to play college golf, now other schools are interested. I don't see him leaving Loyola. I think he wants to add to his plate there, not go elsewhere. But, these tournaments, and the reason you see college coaches at them is because they really reveal character. And, we've seen a lot of guys, shoot 86 one day and, you know, come back with, 76 the next. That's character building. I don't remember ever seeing a 71, 72, 75 being, what was he, three shots off the lead heading into the final round of the virtual unknown and then coming in on Thursday and disqualifying himself. I think that, Gary, carries as much weight as anything he did inside the proverbial ropes the first three rounds, because coaches are looking for character. And Liam O'Farrell really, I think, could not have shown a higher degree of character than what he did yesterday in removing himself from the tournament.
Yeah, that's huge, Rob. And that's a very good point about college coaches looking for character. They're looking for good players, but they're looking for good players with character. And right now I'd say Liam checks both those boxes. Another great little fun story, Rob, was the performance by one Dennis Watson. Dennis with one N in his name, Watson, the son of a former PGA Tour professional from South Africa with the same name. And Dennis was just fun to be around. He just had the time of his life and had a very good finish. I believe he top 10. I don't have the scores in front of me, but I think he was around T9 or T10. I know we both talked to him and had a fun time talking to Dennis.
Yeah, Dennis kind of came in, sort of green, really green to golf in general, even though being the son of a PGA Tour player, he didn't take up the game until about 2-3 years ago. He plays at Saddleback College out in California. And Gary, you like this. He told me that his school doesn't play a fall golf schedule. It's only in the spring. And that's very, very, very odd, especially in California when you have all the resources to play. So he's going to hang around here as long as he can. So I texted him today the link to the last chance qualifier for the Wisconsin State Open at Gretzka. And that'll be, that qualifier at Gretzka is the week before the State Open at Ozaukee. And he's just looking for things to play in. And so that was kind of neat. And he had his girlfriend on the bag. He living in East Troy this summer, great place, part of the state to live, and playing at Geneva National. And I tell you what, Gary, if I could do that, if I could go in the Wayback Machine to 20 years old or whatever he is now and spend my summer doing that, I'd be the first in line. So that was kind of neat to see him do that. But it was just, I think the lasting image from this state amateur is going to be the fact that no one wanted to leave. The Craig's Porch, which is situated in such a way that you can see out one, out 10, all the way out to 16, 17, 18, you can see the whole finishing stretch. And everybody stayed, and I think it was more than just the dollar tacos and dollar ice cream sandwiches that you warned me about. I think they just, everybody was totally enamored with Sand Valley, and not everyone had seen it.
Yeah, such a cool vibe up there, Rob, on that little Craig's Porch, on that little sandy knob. And you mentioned the panorama around there, seeing most of the Sand Valley course. Just incredible place. The Kaiser's family who built Bandon Dunes and have sort of modeled Sand Valley after that. Those guys, the brothers, Michael Kaiser and Chris Kaiser, really know what they're doing. And, they're building a lot more golf out there, Rob. They're building the Lido, which I guess opened to some very small number of members, played some preview play there during the state amateur. But Tom Doak's working on another course, Sedge Valley, that's going to open 2024. And I interviewed Michael Kaiser for another project I'm working on a couple days ago. And he told me that eventually they're going to have 8 or 9 courses there. So that is a lot of golf, and it's all great golf too. It's just a fun place to be.
Well, and we got wind yesterday that the Lido is in line to maybe fill one of the gaps in the state amateur schedule. Presumably, I had heard 25 or 26, 26 already assigned to West Bend Country Club. So if that were the case, they would have to move West Bend to another year. But 27 and 28 are also open. And I don't think there's a guy in the field that wouldn't want to come back. And perhaps the most vocal about his love for Sand Valley was the cagey veteran Bob Grigorski. And he'd only been there once or twice, I think he said. And but when he got there, he was just so in love with what he saw. He called his wife back in Menasha, Candy, and said she needed to come up there. And they had a little, I think, a villa overlooking the sandbox course, the 17-hole par three. And he said there were guys playing there, Gary, until the very edge of darkness, the night that Candy came up to stay. And they were, and again, you start playing golf at Sand Valley, you don't want to stop. And it's all about golf. It, you know, someone asked, you know, or someone made the comment to Bob that, yeah, this place would be good with a spa for the ladies or something, you know, and it, like a Sundara down in the Dells. And I no way. I mean, make it all about the golf. And, you know, there's a lot of things near enough. I think you wrote that the Obermuellers were planning to, what, maybe spend part of the week down at the Dells at the water parks. But the longer that
I think
tournament, that
there must be a small there must be a small water park in Rapids, because I think that's where they said they were going.
Okay, so yes,
know, Rob, is there one?
Well, funny you bring that up. They you know, when I was growing up, it was always the municipal pools, but now right outside the baseball stadium, where they used to have the Class A minor league team, now it's a Northwoods League team. They have put in this apparently somewhat elaborate water park in the middle of town. And yeah, so I forgot about that. So that makes total sense now. It's funny, because the Schmidtke family, one of Max Schmidtke's high school basketball teammates, was made the Northwoods League All-Star game, which apparently was played in Rapids on Tuesday night. I didn't know about that. And
no.
And so they went and watched about seven or eight innings of Northwoods League baseball. So there's a, you know, sneaky, there was a lot to do. And I tell you what, after after our break here, Gary, we will talk about what you and I did off the golf course. But first, let's tell our listeners that Talking.Golf is presented by Iron Jock and Wisconsin.Golf's Shirts of Summer. We put them to good use this week. It was hot and sunny up in the central part of the state, but fortunately, we had Iron Jock Advanced Performance Gear, because that gear infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. That technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat. And the long story short on that, Gary and I didn't smell quite as bad when we were wearing our Iron Jock at the State Am after playing golf in the morning than we otherwise would have. But no other brand offers that world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. Gary, we got to tell the listeners, we played hooky for a little bit of the Wednesday-Thursday schedule. Poor Jim was out there taking pictures and sending me to put up on Twitter. And we were at the Ridges Golf Course in Wisconsin Rapids on Wednesday and Mound View Golf Course in Friendship on Thursday. You checked two courses off your list that you've never played. I checked one off in Mound View. All right, what did you think? Let's give our listeners the skinny. We'll be writing about these, I think, here in the coming weeks. But so spoiler alert, they weren't half bad, were they?
No, you know, the Riches, that back nine, really, really cool nine, Rob, with some really kind of funky holes that it helps to play that course, I think, you know, a couple times to learn where you're going on that back nine. But I thought that was a lot of fun. And Mound View, I think they made the most of nine holes by turning into multiple, I guess, courses, you could say, with varying tee boxes. We played it twice and played to the same greens, but from different lengths and different angles, and it made it kind of fun. So I thought, you know, it was a fun time playing both those golf courses.
Well, the Ridges when I was growing up was, I guess, best described as a very average 18-hole course overshadowed by the private course in town, Bullseye, and then, of course, once Century World opened, you know, there wasn't too far to go. It was the place to go for 18-hole golf in Rapids, because the other two courses were nine holes, and Lake Arrowhead didn't come along until about 1984, because when I graduated high school, they only had 10 holes. And so the Ridges has definitely kept up, and we saw it, and we played with a guy from Illinois, and then the couple behind us in the back nine, he was wearing a Cog Hill Dubs Dread cap, so I think everybody feeling the positive effects of what Sand Valley is doing in terms of bringing golfers to the area. And then, of course, I see people I know when I'm in the old stomping grounds, my high school or my middle school, my junior high social studies teacher at the Ridges. And then from all my years of covering high school basketball down at the State Journal, the legendary Adams Friendship boys basketball coach Steve Klass was off to hit range balls as we were leaving. And he was the architect of the, he called it the 3-2, the 1-3-1 zone defense. And he stymied many, many a team and took several really great teams to the state tournament. So it was fun to see him. He was, he looks as healthy as ever and certainly enjoying life in central Wisconsin. But it's neat to see, you know, I think we talk a lot about the impact that courses like Central World and now Sand Valley have had on just, you know, the perception of golf in Wisconsin and the visibility of golf in Wisconsin. But I think it's also helped raise the bar when it comes to all the other courses that have to be, you know, at least, you know, watering their fairways, cutting their greens. I mean, the two courses we had, you know, that we played, you know, are your average Wisconsin courses. But I mean, for those courses, they were in tremendous shape and very popular to tell for the, with the local people. And, you know, I always think it's worth playing a course once just to see what it's like. And I think you and I are in the same boat. We want to be like, what is it, John Krieger, who had the Wisconsin golf book. You know, I think he's played every course in the state and several have tried and many have succeeded. I don't know if I can get to everyone, but it's nice to knock a few more off that you haven't played.
Well, in my book, Rob, there's no such thing as a bad golf course. There are some courses that are better than others, but none of them are bad. I can always have them no matter what the greens are like, no matter what, if there's clover in the fairways and the greens are running at 6 on a stint meter, you're still on the golf course, right? And you're right. And you could tell there was pride of ownership in those courses in the Ridges and in Moundview. You could tell that the people who were working there and the people who played there were proud of their facilities and justifiably so. And, you know, are they Sand Valley? No, they're not. But there's room for all kinds of golf courses. And that's what makes Wisconsin with 475 golf courses such a great state for golf.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Gary, because I do need to give a shout out to Todd and Michelle Goska at the Ridges. They bought the course back in 1995 when it was kind of, you know, way back in the day, it had a racetrack out in front of it, an old dirt track racetrack. I'm sure Dick Trickle, who was a legend in mild stomping grounds on the NASCAR circuit, would have raced there. And they have converted it into a really top-notch 18-hole public golf course. And then Moundview was purchased just a couple of years ago by Joe Thiessen, who you might hear on commercials for his Fairway Mortgage Company in the Madison area. But those who have followed the career of Bo Ryan know that Joe was a player for Bo down at UW-Platteville and a great high school player. We were talking to Steve Klass about that. And he and his wife purchased Moundview a couple of years ago, you know, because you take Moundview out of the equation. And if you're living in Adams and Friendship, you have the option of going, you know, north to Sand Valley, Lake Arrowhead, west to Northern Bay, high-end replica course, or south to the Dells, where, you know, maybe, just maybe, Coldwater Canyon's affordable. But, you know, it's really the only, you know, the only, I guess we would call, you know, mom and pop type course in a very large area. You know, Thal Acres over in Westfield might cut, you know, fit the bill. But so neat to see what they're doing as far as giving back to their communities. But it was a good stay. I mean, we had a great VRBO. Just what, 8 minutes from the golf course at Sand Valley. We ate at some great restaurants. You recommended the Lure. I scored on Hoozles at the Lakes over by Arrowhead. You know, I could have spent another week there without covering golf. I would have liked to just put my feet up and been able to you know, kind of relax a little bit.
You know, I love that area of the state, Rob, and not just for the golf. It's just it's a laid back. It's just a fun place to be with Big Lake Pete and Well and some of the bars on that lake. But you know, the one thing is, Rob, you have to be very careful when you drive at dusk, because we must have seen 50 deer over the course of 2 or 3 days just driving at dusk to restaurants. You got two hands on the wheel and your eyes are darting from side to side because you never know when a big buck is going to run right in front of your car. I'm surprised there must be a ton of automobile deer encounters up there, I would think.
There've got to be. And then we're by the Verbo. One night we saw three strolling across the road. So, you know, that they own the only area there. So just a great time in central Wisconsin covering the state amateur championship. And now we've kind of got to regroup. I was kind of slapped back in reality. It was a late night last night writing and posting And then I was able to sleep in a little bit, and then flew back today and was on the same flight as another Marquette guy. This is the Milwaukee Marquette Hour. Jackson Cross and his dad were coming down to play golf at Quintero. I don't know. You might have. I don't. If you ever played in that Chuck Garbedian outing down here with his buddy, I think Quintero is always on it. It's one of the public courses you go to play. It's a great time to play right now because it's not $300 as Jackson and his dad said at the baggage claim. And but then they're going to go watch a Diamondbacks game. They're on a mission to watch baseball in every park in the country, and they're going to knock off this one and then two down in Texas this year. So, and I believe if I remember correctly, Jackson's going to be a senior this year at Marquette. So you know, those father son opportunities don't have much time left. So that's a cool thing there. And then you and I need to, you know, remember that there's other golf being played before we started our podcast. Jerry Kelly is playing his golf basically in the middle of the night over here in the States because it's the British Senior Open. And last night while I was writing, I got to see the replay of round one where Jerry came to the 14th tee well back of the leaders. He was at even par, and he birdies the last five holes in a row to get to five under. And then today, shoots 72. He's still what is he here? T3. They're using the European Tour leaderboard. He's alone in third. No, T3 with about half the field. It looks like here he's tied third. Bernhard Langer, Padraig Harrington, Paul Broadhurst, Stephen Ames, David Frost, Ernie Els. So that's a pretty good contingent, and they're all chasing Darren Clark. So Jerry Kelly, he can turn it on and off, can he?
He can. And Rob, you know, I mean, if he goes on this one, you start talking about he's in, you know, the picture for senior Champions Tour Player of the Year, which he's been close to winning, you know, going into the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs the last couple of years. So, yeah, he's been in the mix. Boy, four out of five tournaments, it seems like he plays, and he's a top 10 guy and fighting for to try to win the tournament. So, the Energizer Bunny, he just keeps going, Rob, and he's playing with some great golf.
He sure is. And so we've got that going. Earlier in the week, Jessica Geiser qualified for the match play portion of the U.S. Girls Junior, lost in the first round there. And then Emily Lauterbach was actually leading after the first day of stroke play qualifying at the Women's Western Amateur down in Illinois, and got into match play and then lost her first round match there. But she got her picture on the front of the Western Golf Association or the Women's Western Golf Association website for her play in the first round. And and now this week, Mason Schmidtke, Jacob Beckman, for sure. I'm sure I'm missing somebody because I think there were three qualifiers out of the Blackhawk one. But it's U.S. Junior Boys. And it's out at Bandon Dunes, and we talked to Mason about going from one Michael Kaiser course to another, you know, and Jacob Beckman's in the same boat. I mean, how cool is that? You get to go from Sand Valley to Bandon Dunes. I mean, that's like the ultimate doubleheader if you're a junior, if you're a golfer of any age, Gary D'Amato.
Absolutely, Rob. You know, Bandon Dunes now has earned the reputation of being maybe the best golf destination in the world. And it's on everyone's bucket list. Anyone who's serious about golf and does a little traveling and plays golf at other places wants to get there and play. And, you know, Sand Valley is becoming that place too, Rob, where people are coming from all over the world to play Sand Valley. It's, to go from here, to go from Sand Valley to Bandon Dunes, I mean, that's just a treat for the Schmidtkes. For Mason, who's playing, and for Max, who will be caddying for him.
Well, and especially for Max, because he's going to play out there with the University of South Dakota this upcoming season, and so he'll get a look at what he's up against here, you know, for his next collegiate season. So it's a win-win for everybody, and I know the whole family's eager to get out there and see what Bandon looks like. The other qualifier out of the Madison Junior U.S. Junior qualifying site was Ryan Banas of Winnetka, Illinois, and he won a playoff over Will Harned out of Neshota and Aiden Cudney out of Appleton. Both Will and Aiden not only, you know, may not have qualified through there, Gary, but they were very much a part of the conversation at Sand Valley this week. In fact, I think Will Harnett was one of the last groups yesterday. He spends his summers in the show. He's from Connecticut. You mentioned him in your game story, I believe it was Wednesday. And Aiden just continues to be a presence. And then also very active and insightful on social media in terms of sharing with, you know, people who follow him, you know, his thoughts on how he played. And to me, they're always very, I think, very good, because it shows that, you know, while it's disappointing that maybe he didn't get in the final group or didn't have a chance to win, he learned a lot. And at his age, he's, I think, a rising junior at Kimberly. You know, you just can't put too much emphasis on every single stop in a summer schedule. I had that conversation with Will Schlitz, the WIA state champion, and had his high school coach and mini tour golfer Ryan Isaacson on the bag. And Ryan was saying that, you know, he really wanted Will to play in the state open, or at least the state open qualifying, but there's a competing WPGA junior major event that week as well. I think it might be the Lake Arrowhead invite, in fact. And but one of them, and he says, you know, there'll be state opens down the road. And I think there's a, you know, that's good to see these kids, you know, realize that there needs to be a balance. But so it'll be good to see the two, though, Jacob Beckman and Mason Schmidtke. Jacob played really well to get there and had a rough time at the state amateur, missed the cut, but Mason Schmidtke made the cut, and both of them, though, know what it's, you know, what's coming. So what else do we got on the horizon? You made a visit to a great facility. I think that'll be in Sweet Spot on Monday down at the Racine Country Club. All these clubs around the state continue to make golf a year-round activity, don't they, Gary?
Yeah, Rob, I got to see the Billows Lodge today, named after Ray Billows, who back, I don't know, 80 years ago was a fine amateur, came out of Racine and went, moved to New York and had a ton of success, won the Porter Cup a couple times and Transmiss and some big amateur tournaments, was a friend of Bobby Jones. And so a member at Racine Country Club named Scott Molitor financed this Billows Lodge. And it is going to turn Racine Country Club into a 12-month club, because they're going to, they have, there's some indoor-outdoor hitting bays that you can open some garage doors and hit onto the range with heaters. But there's also four indoor bays with simulators. There's a fully stocked bar. And in the winter, they're going to have it as a hub for snowshoeing and cross-country skiing and sledding. So the members are very fortunate that Scott Molitor, you know, finance this project, because it's a state-of-the-art building with all the toys and amenities that you could ever want, Rob.
Boy, sounds great, and I can't wait to read about that in Monday's Sweet Spot. And we can also tease that Gary will have information on, hopefully, if we get to it this week, on the newest Division II women's golf program, and it's pretty close to home. So a lot of activity at the college level, too. That we just don't have time to get to this week. So Gary, we'll save that conversation for next week, and I'll let you you know, get some rest back, and we'll convene again here on Talking.Golf next week.
All right, Rob, thanks.
All right, for Gary, I'm Rob. This has been Talking.Golf, and we are presented by Iron Jock and Wisconsin.Golf's Shirts of Summer. There are two constants of a Wisconsin summer, heat and humidity, but they're no match for the I and J of Iron Jock. That's advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. This Iron Jock technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand than Iron Jock offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. So join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. We'll talk golf again next week.